You are listening to the Wabash Presbyterian Church podcast for Sunday, January 3rd. In this podcast, guest speaker Laura Helm shares on John chapter 1, verses 1 through 14, in her message entitled, Christmas to be Continued.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was the beginning with God. All things were made through him. And without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and in the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God, whose name was John. He came with as a witness, to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of will of the flesh, nor of will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, and glory as only the Son from the Father, full of grace and truth.
Good morning, Wabash Presbyterian Church.
Good morning.
I am so happy to be with you this morning. And for as happy as I am to be here, there's someone who sends her regrets and is so sad that she couldn't be here today. From the time that Jonathan contacted Laura to ask her to be here and worship with you today, she was so excited and talked about it daily. And so she wanted me to pass on a big group hug to all of you. There you go. And to just let you know how sorry she was to miss you today. And of course, we will hold her and her family and her mom in our thoughts and prayers. Wow. Christmas to be continued. I hijacked Laura's sermon title. I didn't hijack her sermon, but I did hijack the title. Here we are. It's the first Sunday of the new year. To me, already, Christmas seems so far away. It doesn't seem like it was just a few days ago. It seems so far away. And today, it's the question is, what if we could continue that? What part of Christmas would we continue? I think the answer to that question really has to do with your age. At the Access, we obviously are with a lot of kids in a lot of different situations and a lot of different ages every single day. And I think that if we were to ask them what they would want to continue, they would say gifts, right? Giving, receiving gifts. If someone was to ask me what I would like to continue from Christmas, specifically from this Christmas break we're coming off of, I would say naps. I'm a big fan of the Christmas nap, and if that could continue the whole year, that would be great. Food, right? We get out like the best recipes for Christmas, so maybe we would continue that. But as we look at that question of what to continue, if we look at it through the lens of John chapter 1, which Cale read for us, we see that it's really the work of Christmas, the coming of the light. That's what we must pursue throughout the year. We've went through the season of Advent, right? We were in darkness and anticipating the light. We were waiting, we were reflecting, and that's what Advent was all about. We were waiting and reflecting in the darkness. And then our Christmas Eve service comes and we celebrate the coming of the light, of Jesus our Christ. The light is here. It's what we've been waiting on. And then sometimes after that service ends, we tend to put Christmas away. Sometimes we put the work of Christmas away. Much of Christmas has been put away, right? On December 26th, on my Facebook news feed, I had friends taking down their lights and putting their tree to the curb, okay? They were putting Christmas away, and speaking of that, have you seen the candy aisle at Walmart? It is Valentine's Day now, okay? Christmas has been put away. So today, on this to-be-continued Sunday, I want us to take a look at the continued work of Christmas, of the coming of the light of Jesus our Christ. If we look at the text for today, Christmas is defined in here. Verse 14 says, "The Word became flesh and made his home among us." That's Christmas, right? In one sentence, that's Christmas. Now, if we go up a little bit into the verses for today, if we go up to verse 4, we kind of see the work of Christmas being defined. What came into being through the Word was life, and the life was the light for all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness doesn't extinguish the light. The work of Christmas. And here's our part. A man named John was sent from God. He came as a witness to testify concerning the light, so that through him everyone would believe in the light. He himself wasn't the light, but his mission was to testify concerning the light. His mission, the message of Christmas, the work of Christmas, to testify concerning the light. Light is obviously a theme through this passage. The word light is phos in Greek. I looked it up on Pierce's Outline of Biblical Usage, and this is what it had to say about light in context here. God is light because light has the extremely delicate, subtle, pure, brilliant quality. I love that. Jesus is not referred to as light and isn't called light because light is harsh. Because when you're in darkness, when you're desperate for light, harsh isn't necessarily what you need. You need delicate, subtle, pure, brilliant light. Have you ever been desperate for light? I have been. When I was preparing this yesterday, I got to thinking about a time when I was a kid. I grew up in a farmhouse in the middle of nowhere in Miami County. Cornfields everywhere. It's a small farm, an incredibly old house. It was one of those houses that, you know how most staircases are like this? And in this house, the staircase was like this. And the steps were about this wide, right? Some of you know what I'm talking about. And you had to like walk sideways to get up the stairs. And our bedrooms were up the stairs. And in this particular staircase, there were two light switches, one at the bottom, one at the top. And the way this worked was you could only work that light by the switch that you had used last. Some of you know what I'm talking about, right? You turn the light on at the bottom of the stairs. You go to the top. You turn it off. And then, if you want to turn the light back on, it has to be done by that top switch. Now, 40-year-old Liz is very distracted, but 10-year-old Liz was a mess. And I could never remember to turn that switch, okay? So at night, I would turn the switch on at the bottom, and I would go to the top, and I would turn my light on in my room and come out and turn the light off and go to bed. And then in the morning, I would just go downstairs, and I wouldn't think anything about it. I didn't think about the switch. I didn't think about the hallway. I didn't think about any of that until it came time to go to bed that evening. And I was 10 years old in a very dark, creaky, big farmhouse in the middle of nowhere. And I had to ascend these stairs in the dark. Now, I should tell you before I go on with the story that in my home, I had a dad who liked to scare people. And he was good at it. And he didn't need costumes and he didn't need props. He didn't really even need to make that much noise. He was just good at it. And so, as I would go up the stairs in the dark, the light switch upstairs was, by the way, was kind of back behind this little, there's a little hallway, and that's where the switch was. So I would go upstairs, and I would be grasping for that switch. My dad, unbeknownst to me, had went up ahead of me and was standing in the hallway, in the dark, quietly. And as 10-year-old Liz reached around, my dad would just reach up and grab my hand. And it terrified me. Now, in reality, he probably did that twice. But in my mind, that was going to happen every single time. And even if Dad was at work, somebody was going to be in that hallway to just reach out and grab my hand. And I was desperate for that light switch to come on. I was desperate to find it. I was young. I couldn't vocalize or identify why I needed the work of that light, but I knew I needed it. And I was desperate for it. Have you ever been desperate for the work of light? Our world, our nation, our state, our county, our community is filled with people who are standing in dark hallways desperate for light. We have that light. They know they need the work of the light. They might not understand why. They may not be able to vocalize what they need, but we have that light. Let's go back to verse 5. Verse 9, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness doesn't extinguish the light. Verse 9, the true light that shines on all people. All people. It says, John the Baptist came as a witness to testify so that everyone would believe in the light. Our work of Christmas is to reflect that light. We're not the light. It's pretty clear in here, right? John the Baptist, not the light. He was there to testify about the light. We aren't the light. We're there to reflect that light. But as we reflect it, we need to remember what type of light it is. Remember, it's not a harsh light. It's an extremely delicate, subtle, pure, brilliant light. I recently took a philosophy class. I'm a student at Indiana Wesleyan. I recently took a philosophy class, and there's a great piece of writing called The Allegory of the Cave, and it's by Plato. I'm going to summarize the story, and then I'm going to read a little bit from it. But basically, the premise is this. There's a cave, and there are prisoners who are chained in this cave. Now, these prisoners have been there since childhood, okay? They're chained up in a way that they can't move their heads, they can't turn around, they can't do anything but stare at the wall of the cave. Behind them is the opening of the cave, right? There's some light back there. People walk, animals and people go in front of that opening all throughout the day, and it shows shadows on the light of that cave, or on the wall of that cave, and that's all the prisoners can see. That's all the prisoners have ever seen, are those shadows and this darkness. One of them gets released, right? He gets released. They unshackle him. He heads for the opening of the cave, and it's bright, right? Like, he's been in this cave since childhood, and he gets to the opening of the cave, and it's bright. And this is from the story, and it's Plato's words, so bear with me here a little bit. And if he is compelled to look straight at the light, will he not have a pain in his eyes which will make him turn away to take in the objects of vision which he can see and which he will conceive to be in reality clearer than the things which are now being shown to him? Basically, as he heads for this light, is it not going to hurt his eyes so much that he's tempted to turn around and to look back into the cave where it's comfortable, where he understands that shadows, darkness, he can see in there? That doesn't hurt him as much. And suppose once more that as he leaves the cave, he is reluctantly dragged up a steep and rugged ascent and held fast until he's forced into the presence of the sun himself. Is he not likely to be pained and irritated? When he approaches the light, his eyes will be dazzled and he will not be able to see anything at all of what are now called realities. So he's out of the cave now, he's into the light, and someone thinks, this is a great idea, we're just going to take him to the top of the hill so he's really close to the sun, and we're going to let him look like right at it, and then he'll be able to see really clear right away. But that's not how it works. And Plato says, not all in a moment. He will require to grow accustomed to the sight of the upper world. And first he will see the shadows best. Next, the reflections of men and other objects in the water, and then the objects themselves. Then he will gaze upon the light of the moon and the stars and the spangled heaven, and he will see the sky and the stars by night better than the sun or the light of the sun by day. Basically, baby steps, right? He'll be able to see and to handle light and to understand light and to see clearly, but it's going to take time. Last of all, he will be able to see the sun, and not mere reflections of him in the water, but he will see him in his own proper place and not in another, and he will contemplate him as he is. Wow. When I read the allegory of the cave, that struck me, that this individual who had been in darkness since childhood and was coming toward the light, that it was a painful process sometimes, and it took time because his eyes needed to adjust, right? We know that. We know that when we're in a dark room and a light comes on, it takes a little time. And that the reverse is true, that when we're in light and we walk into someplace dark, that our eyes have to adjust. And that's what we see happening here. Those people in our world who are standing in dark hallways, some of those hallways are generational. Some of that darkness that they're standing in, their mom and dad stood in before them. Their grandma and grandpa stood there too. And they've been there for a really long time. And if we go in with a harsh light, it's going to pain them. And they're not going to be able to see what we want them to see. They're not going to be able to see what to us is so clear. And sometimes that's frustrating. Sometimes the work of Christmas and sharing this light is frustrating because looking from the outside in, we can think to ourselves, well, if you would just do this, 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 and this, everything would be fine. We could wrap this up and go on our way. But the work of Christmas isn't quite that easy and tidy. Sometimes it's messy and frustrating. As we are testifying to the power of this light, as we are reflecting this light, it's going to be that way. It's going to be frustrating because sometimes we're going to run into people who need time for their eyes to adjust. What if the work of Christmas is being that safe place and that safe person? What if the work of Christmas for the church is being that haven for people whose eyes are adjusting to the light, who need that time? What if that's the work of Christmas that we're supposed to continue, to walk with them, to be patient with them, to help them with when they stumble? There was a YouTube video that I watched about the allegory of the cave. And in that particular video, the guy stumbled, right? He came out of the cave, he's trying to walk, and the light was so bright and everything around him was so new, and he stumbled and he tripped and he fell, and sometimes that's going to happen when light comes. So we need to be willing to be there to help them. Because as their world gets lit up, it's going to uncover some mess, right? That happens. I don't normally wear this, okay? This is not what I wear at the youth center. When I found out Friday night at midnight that I was going to be here today, I had to find these pants, all right? Now, that may be too much information, but I'm just going to tell you, I had to find these pants. And in my closet, I don't have a light. So I have my cell phone. I turned on my cell phone light, and I'm looking around. Now, I knew that I had some issues in my closet. I knew that there might be some mess, but I had no idea how much mess there was until the light came on. So I did the right thing. I took these pants out, I shut the door, and I walked away. Okay? Because that's what happens when light comes. It uncovers mess. Sometimes we may even know it's there, but we don't know how significant or how big it is until that light comes on. Christmas comes with mess. You can't tell me that you unwrap presents without having trash bags nearby. That is a tradition that we all share. It does not matter what religion we are. If we are unwrapping gifts, we have trash bags nearby. No one ever takes their Christmas card pictures with their trash bags, but they should because we all have that in common. Christmas comes with mess. The work of Christmas also comes with mess. And we have to be willing to be that safe place, that safe person, that safe haven for people whose eyes are adjusting. They're not going to get it all at one time. They have to learn how to walk in light. They have to learn how to work in light, to learn how to take care of their kids in light. Have to learn how to do all of this again because they knew how to do it in the dark and in the shadows, which may seem backwards to us, but reality to them. They knew how to do it there. They weren't doing it well, maybe, but they knew how to do it there, and now they have to learn again. Reflecting light. An extremely delicate, subtle, pure, brilliant light. This is what we get to continue. This is what we get to do. And as I bring this to a close this morning, I wanted to share Thurman's poem, The Work of Christmas. when the song of the angels is stilled, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and the princes are home, and when the shepherds are back with their flocks, the work of Christmas begins. To find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among the people, and to make music in the heart. May it be so for us. Amen.
You have been listening to a podcast from Wabash Presbyterian Church. For more sermons and resources, please visit us at wabashpresbyterian.com.